Hello, everyone. My name is Mike Kirk. I'm the CEO of RMK Capital, which is a maritime-focused investment bank based in New York. I'm also a managing director of RMK Maritime. RMK Maritime provides advisory and capital-raising services, mainly on the debt and sale-leaseback side. And we just closed our first deal in China in March with Golar LNG and Costco CSL. Wanted to thank Capital Link for this great event. It's been an extremely interesting group of panelists thus far, and hopefully we can continue on that path. While I'm reasonably fluent on private equity and alternative financing, much less so when it comes to China, and so very interested to hear what the panelists have to say. If each of the panelists don't mind introducing themselves, and then we'll get on with the questions. Thanks.
Okay, my name is Mark Yang. I work with the company called AMP, Asia Maritime Pacific. Basically, we own and manage controls about 50 ships. Most of them are handy. Our headquarters in Hong Kong, with our operational base in Shanghai, and we have office in London, U.S. Austin. Tokyo, Melbourne.
Vetle Schuver from Fernley Securities. We're based in Oslo and New York. Primarily work with public companies on the bond and equity side, and also M&A advisory and selling these packs. We also have an office in New York and been quite active in the American market as of the last year.
Hello, everyone. My name is Gordon, and I'm the CEO of KLN Capital. I think KLN Capital is one of the very, very few private equity fund that is focusing on maritime and logistics industries in China. Right now, we have office in Shanghai and Tianjin and cooperation with the local government. And also, we actually raised fund mostly before in outside China, and now we are switching focus to China for RMB investors. And we see that's a huge huge market. Thanks. That's it.
Martin Hooker. I'm from Meerbaum Capital. Meerbaum is an advisor to Oaktree in terms of arranging senior lending. We're also backed by the Petros Pappas Group, who provides the technical expertise to evaluate vessels that we finance. Main focus is on asset-based finance, so we are willing and prepared to finance projects that are initially cash flow negative, and we are also not relying on corporate or long-term time charter coverage, which means that if someone is out there who wants to buy a vessel, we are not only able to act quick, by which I don't mean 3 months, but rather 3 weeks, but we are also able to let him play the market he wants to play it.
My name is Erik Stromsa. I'm with Pareto Securities. We are a Scandinavia-based investment bank. Internationally, our focus is primarily on maritime, energy, and offshore financing, where we try to have basically a sort of full scale of services, whether it's transaction advisory, U.S. private placement, bonds, or equity. We've been present in Asia now, in Singapore, where I work, for about 11 years, so we have a long presence. Worked with a lot of the leasing houses, and also facilitated capital from the West coming here. So basically tried to act as a bit of a bridge between the two markets on the shipping and maritime side.
Great. So the first question for the panelists, given shipping's importance in China and in Asia more broadly, the capital markets here are less developed than in the U.S. and even in Norway. Just wondering why and how does this change?
Okay, I will try to answer that question. I can see the capital market in China has been continuously improving. Although the present challenging market actually put a little bit obstacles for the Chinese shipping development. However, we discussed just before this panel. We discussed a lot of Chinese leasing companies' solution, which I will call it a part of the capital market solutions on the shipping investment. But I would like to say the the private equity investment, also the public market, the listing market, is still lag behind compared with the New York, London, and Hong Kong or Singapore, like those global market.
I can just add to that. I mean, I agree with Mark. It's something that isn't as developed yet. But I mean, if there's one thing we've seen sort of again and again, it's that once the Chinese put their mind to something, it happens quite quickly. And we've seen that with the leasing companies. And we're not going to make this another panel about the leasing companies. but I think a lot of the expertise that you've seen being built there over the past, call it 10 to 15 years, we are now also moving towards more esoteric assets, more bespoke solutions. A lot of that has got to do with the fact that you've created a lot of expertise on shipping, and obviously a natural next step would be for a lot of that expertise to also focus on the equity part of the capital structure. So I'm sure it's just around the corner.
Great. To deviate further away from the leasing, how do owners that can't attract Chinese leasing, how do they raise money in this environment where bank loans are constrained?
I think I can add in there. At least what we have seen in Norway and Scandinavia last 12 months, has since we have these distressed markets in container, dry bulk, and offshore, we have seen significant amounts of distressed equity capital coming in the public equity markets, and also in the Norwegian OTC market. So I think going forward, you also see a lot of Chinese players, leasing companies, also adding into the equity structure. So I think you have seen that with Hafnia now, and also BW Offshore. And I think that can sort of substitute that effect going forward.
I can just add that. I mean, I think the big sort of paradigm change that we're seeing now is that the banks are withdrawing from the shipping financing market in a way that we haven't seen, at least ever in my experience. So really, there's a vacuum there that needs to be filled. And I think the last panel touched on it, and I agree with them, is that, basically as a shipping company these days, you just need to expand your toolbox a little bit and make sure that you're covering all the different sources of capital that are out there. Because the days of just relying on one or two relationship banks who you could trust and you could go to, are gone. You may still have you may still have your relationship banker who's there and willing to finance you, but then there's a guy in a gray suit in the back room, and he's in the credit committee, and he doesn't want to approve anything these days. So it becomes very difficult, even though you have those relationships. So you need to diversify, and you need to look at different sources. And I think that's difficult also for a lot of smaller companies. That's one of the reasons why the larger companies have an advantage in today's market, is that they are able to have larger finance teams who can go out there. They can, run parallel processes with different tracks. They can focus on, Chinese leasing houses one day, and then, European or U.S. alternatives the other. And that's difficult for smaller markets to do, companies to do. So I think it's, that's one of the things that we focus on, is trying to help advise companies on sort of, okay, what's the capital need that you have, and what's the best place to fill it? Because it varies a lot. It depends, what are you looking for? Are you looking for cash flow? Are you looking for the best interest rate? Are you looking for speed? And depending on what the needs are, you need to be able to find that tool in the toolbox.
Eric, if I may add to that, it's not only that you used to rely on traditional bankers, and these bankers are partly still there. It's not that all of them are gone. But even if you have a long-term relationship with one bank, this bank has its limits. No bank is willing to finance any client, irrespective of how good, unlimited in terms of volume. So you need to diversify your sources. And if you look at the way dry bulk has developed over the last 3 to 5 months, if you had managed to buy a vessel in January, rather than wait for 2, 3, 4 months for a credit committee to decide, and probably not giving you a hunting license, but deciding on a vessel that you want to buy, the values have gone up like 20-30%. So it doesn't really matter if you pay for short-term solutions a slightly higher price, because you make up by buying better at the moment where you think the price is right for you.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk a little bit beyond the leasing company side, I think, when most people here are talking about. I think this topic, what we say is more about private equity. And in the nature of private equity, I think it's more attached with the risk of tolerance and a little bit higher than the debt financing. And I think, yeah, when we talk about the leasing, it is an improvement because the bank leasing companies or the usual commercial leasing companies, they are giving a bit more, contributing a bit more in the form of a mezzanine debt and package it in the form of leasing products to the people who need it. However, the most needed capital in the market, all by the end users, are still the equity, I think. But ironically, as we talk about this topic here, we don't see the big names of the private equity player in China here in the room. We name it like Hong Yi, we like the Ping An, we say Hui Tian Fu, we know our capital management. They're not here. And I think that's an interesting thing, because that's also give us a potential market. That's why we Keating Capital is doing that, because this is something we call old industry. However, it's so new to Chinese equity investors. And people know that China is becoming a capital export country today. Crazily, they are buying real estates, even soccer clubs and all outside China. But why they are so hesitant to do that in the shipping industry when we are seeing such a super cycle investment opportunities here, if people agree with me. So that's also, I want to talk a bit beyond that. And I think Keating Capital is here, and also I want to raise attention and do something as first mover in China to get people, get the investors, get the capital to this industry who really need the capital.
And Gordon, is your fund focused on shipping?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let's make it bigger. We focus on maritime and logistics. And in that scope, I think the most interesting part is shipping today.
And are you focused both in China and outside, or just within China?
Because shipping is definitely a global business. So if you do it, of course, we never reject outside business opportunities.
Yeah. So to that end, I think that it's very interesting to hear that there's starting to become private equity within China that's making investments both domestically and abroad.
Yeah.
For some of the panelists, what do you think the challenges have been for private equity, let's say U.S. and European-based private equity, and even within the Asian region, investing in Chinese companies? Because we haven't seen a whole lot of that, despite the fact that a lot of Chinese companies are able to, close to the action and able to access interesting financing. So what do you think is keeping private equity away from direct investments into Chinese shipping companies?
I think that's what we call asymmetric information. We say that because even China is playing such an important role in the whole industry as the largest user, one of the largest users of the shipping assets, or the largest manufacturer of the shipping assets in the world. People still, or a majority of the ordinary investors or capital holders, have very little idea about the industry. I think that's the key reason behind it. On the other hand, people are hearing bad news about shipping all the time, because the most accessible information is from the secondary market, that is the public or stock market. And look around in China, the Framers shipping companies are not playing well or performing well comparing with other industries. So that is giving a further bad impression to the investors. And that's why we say at this stage, people and people with money or institutions with money have a little bit negative impression on this industry. And but on the other hand, we will say that brings the opportunity to us. Because we see KKR, Oaktree, or these famous players who can give some good examples to Chinese investors or institutions are moving quite solid into the industry space with new investment. And I think as long as we are staying here, hanging here, and giving more education to investors, and that's what we are exactly doing now, and we are investing, then with a quite short time, I think Chinese can learn very fast and become part of that players.
Anyone else have a view on investing in Chinese domestic companies?
No, actually, I had a little bit of experience because AMP is one of the very few company. I will not call us just a Chinese company because our equity-wise, you know, we have Chinese, we have Western investors, we have institutional investors. My experience said a lot of that gap, a lot of that obstacles for the Western PE fund looking to invest into a Chinese company is probably the problem is probably come from a Chinese side, they themselves. I think when the Chinese companies, shipping companies set up their business, they do have the certain competitiveness on the certain area, but probably they forget, they don't have experience about how to build a modern structured company with a very clear shareholder structure, with a good the internal risk management, internal covenants. So that actually is one of the challenge when the Western money try to look into the Chinese company, try to invest into Chinese company. When you look at the Chinese company, some of them actually they have some cargo connections. They actually, they have a pretty good cost control method there, but they're lacking of a lot of things the Western PE fund like to see. So I think that's just like Golden said, I think the Chinese shipping company, they need education, they need a time to keep improve themselves so that they can really become an international standard company.
I think just one other thing that I would add is that private equity gets thrown around a lot as a term of the investors that have been investing in shipping, but in actual fact there aren't that many private equity companies that have gone into shipping in the sort of standard way a private equity company would normally invest, i.e. going in, taking a controlling stake, holding it for a while, and then leveraging up and exiting. Most of the capital that's been coming into this market has been, hedge funds, distressed debt opportunity funds. And these are sort of fairly far to the right on sort of the scale of being quite advanced in nature. So I mean, in any capital market, it's normal that you start out with sort of government bonds, and you move on to having rated bonds, and then we're starting to see more and more interest out of China now for unrated bonds, for instance. So the level of complexity in the capital structure, the interest for that is increasing. But the real interest in shipping out of the Western funds, out of New York and London, were distressed debt investors that saw this whole industry as just one big distressed industry and went in there for that reason. So there weren't that many private equity funds from the West either, and that's a part of the explanation why you haven't seen as much private equity from China either. It's not that different.
I think I agree to that, and also just adding to that, I think in general, what you saw 5-7 years ago when you saw all the major private equity money coming into the industry was, these companies or structures are quite time consuming to negotiate and put together. And what you had then was new building deals, basically, in containers and tankers and bulkers. And now you have a price dislocation, meaning that the second-hand values are still far below the new building parities. And if you're going to compete in the second-hand market, you need money swiftly. Like Martin mentioned, you know, prices can go up in dry bulk 30% over 6 months. And if you start negotiating, you know, time-consuming shareholder agreements and so on, you won't be able to make the party.
And Martin, is Mirbaum open for business to Chinese clients?
We are open for business to Chinese clients, provided we find Chinese clients of a good reputation, which I think is not a problem.
Great. whether it's in China, and Gordon, maybe you can answer this in terms of what you're looking for, but also more broadly in Asia, particularly the markets in Singapore and Hong Kong, do you think investors, I know that there's not a ton of listed shipping companies of large size, but do you think investors now and going forward are going to be more yield focused, or are they looking for the asset play and the big returns?
Hey, sir.
Yeah.
Me, right. Well, I think first of all we have to realize China is a huge country. Then that means a lot of our varieties of investors as well. So we do have investors, and we do meet them with more risk tolerance to play assets. And on the other hand, also a significant part of the investors, they want focus on the yield and a little bit more, we'll say, traditional investors. So for us, we don't see very which part is more prominent than other, or which type is more prominent than other type. But as long as the cases we are doing now, the trick of getting investors to the industry is to make the shipping part investment parts more Chinese, and also educate the Chinese investors more international. The environment today is favoring us because the domestic economy of China is slowing down, as people are seeing. So the return of the domestic investments are not that crazy as we experienced before. And it's kind of even keep abreast with the investment outside China. In the meantime, the currency exchange rate is, people are sharing such kind of expression that the RMB is going to further depreciate. So people are kind of driven or motivated to globalizely allocate their assets and portfolio of their wealth. So that is a advantage for us to introduce as we said, outside China shipping assets would be a good a portfolio for them to consider.
Anyone else on that? I thought Gordon made an interesting point earlier, saying that one of China's biggest exports is becoming capital. So as we move forward, what does the rest of the panel think on whether China will be a place for investors to put money into shipping, or whether China will be making investments outside in shipping?
Well, I think it's probably going to be both. So we'll see Chinese capital moving outside China and invest in terms of lending or in terms of equity in shipping companies. But we'll also see a lot being that is going to happen within China. And I think we also continue seeing money coming in from outside into China and into Asia in general. Also on both sides, equity as well as debt. It's more like, you would never ask the question, is French money coming into Germany?
Right. That's right.
Yeah, I fully agree. You know, our biggest shareholder is still a private equity fund. So I think when we are discussing wisdom for the various projects, right, people are looking at that, and the first question they ask is, what is our competitive strength on that? So as long as you are good at something, whether you're a Chinese company, whether you're an international company, I think you will always be able to get money. So, and also I want to say, actually today, the so-called Chinese company, or whether it's American company, or whether it's Hong Kong company, I think the difference actually become quite blurred. And, you know, it's like it's not like that clear, you know, in old days. I always think, you know, shipping, I always say to my people, I say it's very interesting because if you look at the shipping 2,000 years ago, shipping is an international business. Mm-hmm. 2,000 years ago, the Greeks have the ships going to Egypt to carry the wheat to move to the Rome. So the shipping is always an international business. If you are good only in the one country, in the one side, probably you're not good enough to get really international money to look at you. That's just my view.
And this adding on that, I think is one advantage that shipping has in comparison to other industries. If you know some people in some parts of the world, you will have connections to all other parts of the world as well. So if you know someone in Europe, he will have a colleague in Singapore or in Hong Kong or in Shanghai, and you can get information about people. You can find out whether they are good quality owners or whether they are maybe having a track record that is more challenging, and you can find out that in both ways, from Asia to Europe, from Europe to Asia, to the Americas, wherever.
I think we've seen, you know, the easiest access to capital come largely from public companies, and that's both in good times and in bad times, you know, including bankruptcies. These companies seem to have no trouble attracting new capital. And I just wanted to ask the panel, again, kind of focusing on the Asian markets and Asian companies, do you think we're going to see more IPOs and more listings?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there has been massive amounts of new companies also coming in the markets the last 12 to 18 months, and we've seen that in Norway and also in the US. And I think as long as, you know, the markets are, some of the segments are in distress, this is, you know, highly attractive entry point for many investors. And as long as we stay there, there's always room for more capital to come in there. And as long as we have, you know, second-hand tonnage being quite attractively priced as compared to new buildings, I think we'll continue to see. You know, now there has been a lot of dry bulk companies being established. We've seen some in the offshore segment, in the drilling segment, and now we're starting to see container business opening up. So I think as long as you have a distressed segment, there will be capital for that, and they will be able to do new IPOs and new listings for such companies, for sure.
I think there will be more activity on the public scene. I think, you know, there should be a natural link to Asia for you to list a company here. I don't think it would be very easy to just take a Norwegian shipping company and list it in Hong Kong because the multiples are better. But if you do have a link, then those markets have shown themselves to be very, very competitive, both Hong Kong and Shanghai for other businesses in general. So I'm sure that will be a very competitive source of capital. The beauty of the capital markets when it comes to shipping is having pricing in excess of NAV. You don't get that in the private markets, and so that as a way to sort of boost your returns, the returns as a shipping investor is a wonderful thing. Perhaps one of the leasing companies would be out first, listing their portfolio as a leasing company on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. That would make a lot of sense to me.
This is a surprise question for the panel, but given that everyone is either has capital to put to work or is in the finance realm, where would you put your capital today in shipping? What segment or what structure? Mark, should we start with you?
I'm optimistic, so I always put my money in my business. So, you know, I only understand the dry, so I don't think I'm a right person to answer that question because I don't have other option.
I think a perfect answer would be it depends. For our company, the strategy is always like we invest either a leading company in a niche market where they could remain, as Mark said before, a competitive advantage over others, or we will put the money in the segment where we see, we know the circle, the cyclical, and we know the asset value is well below the price it is given today by the market. So it's beyond the price is given today. So that's how we are identifying opportunity of investment today.
I think investing is about understanding what you're doing. So if you understand an industry or you trust and know someone who understands that industry, this is where to put the money. You don't put money in something that just has an attractive tax position or that has a nice sales prospect, but you put your money into something that you understand. And for me, that is shipping as well.
I also think it comes, it comes down to your risk profile. I mean, are you willing to take high risk? Then of course you have some segments that are, quite attractive to entry now. But if you're more like the yield play, it's more difficult. But I think the obvious segments to look at now, if you're willing to take high equity risk, you see both, offshore supply segment and the drillers and also, containers. And containers, it looks like they are where dry bulk were 12 months ago now, even though the market dynamics are quite different. But the pricing has come down very, very, very low, so it looks to be an attractive entry point if you're willing to take high risk.
I think, clearly shipping is very much an in and out type of investment. Certain segments where there's a cyclical low, that could make sense. Other than that, I think finding differentiating factors either through ships that are a little bit more advanced or business models that are a little bit more advanced in terms of having operations, a cargo base, things like that, is something that makes a lot of sense to me. And, longer term, I think gas has a significant growth prospect for itself. So anything to do with LPG and LNG in the longer term, I think also is going to be turned out to be a good investment.
Great. Well, we've got a couple minutes left. I just wanted to see if there's any questions from the audience for the panel. Anything anyone else wants to say or contribute before we wrap up? All right, so like Miss Lee, I think we finished a little early too. Great.